Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you, and welcome to Bedford County Speaks. Today's program is brought to you as a public service by DestinationDelco.com. Just a few miles east of us, you can find the wonders of historic Delaware County and the Brandywine Valley. To learn more, visit DestinationDelco.com. I'll be right back to introduce my guest, District Attorney William Higgins, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
DestinationDelco.com. A new way to experience Delaware County. Destination Delco, from Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. Five different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks, Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., just before Rush, on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Ever been to the Bedford County Courthouse? I mean, inside the courthouse? Well, hopefully you weren't here for official reasons, but we are in the office of District Attorney Bill Higgins. My first time in the courthouse, that is inside, Bill. And what an incredibly marvelous building. And I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us. We really enjoy having you. And thanks again for being such a good sport to do it.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
As is my wont, I like to kind of take us through maybe three or four different areas of these interviews we do here on Bedford County Speaks. And I think the first thing we need to do is find out and explain to the audience why these two people they're going to hear on the radio today sound funny, because neither one of us sound like we're from Bedford.
Yeah, I get that. I get that once in a while.
So having moved here 18 months ago from the Philadelphia area, when did you move to Bedford?
January 2000.
2000.
Yeah.
So it's been 15 plus years.
Been here a little more than 15 years.
Well, you're not a native, Bill. You never will be, but you're probably getting close. You know?
Yeah, well, I think I've been accepted. Yeah,
I think you have. In fact, a lot of people tell me it takes three or four generations to kind of really get in.
That's what I've heard. That's what I heard. Yeah. I'm trying to speed that along if I can.
So Bill Higgins obviously is the DA. How many times have you been elected to this job?
I am running for my fourth term right now. Yes, sir. Yeah.
So you must have been a child when you came here.
I was 26 years old when I first moved here, 26. And I was 29 when I was elected DA.
Now, you were in private practice before you came to Bedford? How did you get here?
Pretty much my first job out of law school was as an assistant district attorney here in Bedford.
Oh, I see.
So I graduated from law school in May 1999, took the bar exam in July, got my results in November, and got hired for this job, started in January 2000.
So how many DAs or assistant DAs were here at that time?
At that time, there was the district attorney, the elected district attorney, and one assistant.
I see.
Yeah.
And you were the assistant.
And I was the assistant. Yeah.
So the entire staff was Bill Higgins.
At times it was, yeah.
So how many do you have now?
We have two full-time assistant DAs now, and then myself as the elected DA.
So you've doubled the staff.
Yeah. But we've brought in a lot of drug forfeiture money and things like that, which I think we'll probably talk about later.
We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but first we want to find out a little bit. You went to Cardinal Dougherty High School in Northeast Philadelphia,
yes,
right?
Sir.
And then graduated from Villanova University.
1996, yeah.
So you're a Wildcat.
Yep.
And then off to Widener Law School.
Yep.
In Wilmington,
in Delaware.
Delaware, right?
Yep.
Okay. So that's kind of the story there of Bill. And you have a family, obviously. You have a wife. And how many children do you have?
My wife, Amy. Mm-hmm. And I have three children, Sarah, who's 10, Caroline, who is going to be 8 in September, and Billy, who is 4 years old.
Okay. So all three children now are Bedford natives.
Yes, they are.
So they can't claim they're newcomers.
No, okay, they've been here since birth.
Okay, good. Our guest today on Bedford County Speaks is Bill Higgins, the district attorney of Bedford County. And Bill obviously has made quite an impact here. And one of the things I would like you to do for us, if you wouldn't mind, for me included, can you give us a little civics lesson on what a district attorney office does?
Sure. The district attorney is ultimately the chief law enforcement officer for the county. We work. Sometimes people get it confused, think the police work for me. That's not the case at all. They're a separate entity. We have three local police departments in Bedford County. We have the Bedford Police, the Everett Police, and Saxton Liberty Township have a police department. And the rest of the county is patrolled by the state police. And each of them are their own law enforcement entity. They do the criminal investigations, and when they file charges, it's my office that, that prosecutes those charges. Now, there is some overlap between the jobs that we do. You know, sometimes the police may call me to discuss charges before they're filed in a case, or to ask me to make a prosecutorial decision as to whether or not something is worthy of prosecution. And then, you know, sometimes even after charges are filed, there's a need for follow-up investigation, and I'll ask the police maybe to follow up, interview additional witnesses, things like that. So they don't, they won't work for me, they work with me, and we work in conjunction together to prosecute crime in Bedford County. So essentially, that's the role of my office, is to bring cases to prosecution. The vast majority of cases we prosecute do result in a plea agreement, and that's good for everybody. You know, when somebody accepts responsibility for their actions, they're far less likely to commit that same offense.
So that's what that means. Again, we've heard this term a million times on television, radio, plea agreement.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think, oh, it's a deal of some kind.
Yeah.
So, but it keeps it away from the court system, so it saves the taxpayers money to go to court.
Absolutely.
Am I right about this?
Yeah, we handle about 700 cases a year.
Right.
There's no possible way to try 700 cases a year.
I see.
And the vast majority of people who get in trouble recognize that they made a mistake, they did something stupid, something they shouldn't have done, and they want to accept responsibility for it.
Gotcha.
And, you know, those are the cases that result in a plea agreement. Sometimes you hear the term plea bargain. I don't like to use that word. It sounds like you got some kind of cheap deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had plea agreements where people plead guilty for life in prison. So just because you entered a plea doesn't mean that you got a slap on the wrist. A plea agreement is exactly that, that the parties agree that this is a fair resolution to the case. Both the defendant and his or her lawyer and the district attorney on behalf of the Commonwealth, we come to an understanding that this is a fair resolution of this case. The things that we take into consideration when negotiating a plea agreement would be the defendant's prior record, the defendant's willingness to accept responsibility, the harm caused to the victim, the feedback from the victim, and you know, the defendant's age, you know, family background, situations like that, you know, what their opportunities for success in the future may be. You know, we don't like to give up on people too soon, especially young people.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we're doing is trying to get people on the right track. And that's a big thing in my office, you know, helping youth get their head on straight and get on the right track.
Well, later on, we're going to talk about the drug enforcement work you do here. But first, I'd like to continue my little civics
sure.
lesson here, if it would be okay. So here's the process, I suppose, and correct me if I'm wrong about some of this stuff. A person is arrested as a suspect for a crime. They go to a district justice, correct, to be arraigned.
Right, right. That's the first step.
And then after the arraignment, what happens?
Okay. Now, there's two different ways you can start the process. One,
okay.
you could be arrested, taken into custody, and brought before a magistrate.
Right.
That's usually for a serious offense, like a felony.
I see.
Or sometimes in domestic violence cases, that same thing happens.
Gotcha.
Or you could be sent a summons in the mail. So if a defendant receives a summons in the mail to appear at court on a certain date and time,
so they
we give them an opportunity to appear.
Magistrate? Is
right.
That the, okay.
For
right.
a preliminary hearing, which is the first evidentiary hearing in a criminal process. It's just to establish, do we have the right person and was a crime actually committed?
I see.
And, you know, the vast majority of those, I mean, almost overwhelmingly are held for court. We wouldn't be arresting somebody if we didn't have that low level of proof.
Yeah. But that's interesting what you just said. I mean, how many times have we heard they got the wrong guy? So to go before the magistrate to determine if you even have the right guy, that's an important step.
Isn't it is a very important step,
yeah.
You know. So, yeah, and that has to happen usually within 3 to 10 days of an arrest
right.
if the person's in jail. If they're not in jail, you can delay it a little bit because they're not their liberty's not
right.
being taken from them at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's that first step where we just established a crime was committed and this is the person who likely committed that crime.
I see.
Yeah.
So a magistrate today is what we used to call a justice of the peace, correct? Is that the same job?
Pretty much, yeah,
okay,
pretty much.
Fine. So that's the first level. Okay, so if you don't mind, we're going to take
sure.
it on now. So I've left the magistrate's office. I've been successfully arraigned. Then what happens?
Then the case is held for court, and it's moved to the Court of Common Pleas, where it's put on what's called a trial list. Now, that's somewhat of a misnomer because just because it's on a trial list doesn't mean it's going to trial.
I see.
It just means that's how we're keeping track of it.
Right.
And then within 2 months after your preliminary hearing, we bring everybody in for what's called a status conference to discuss the case and, you know, determine, is this going to be a plea? Is it going to be a trial? Or is there some reason we need to continue this to the next trial term? And like I said, 90% of the cases get resolved at that first listing with a plea agreement.
So that's where the plea agreements are made.
Negotiated at that level.
Conference you have. Our guest is Bill Higgins, the district attorney of Bedford County, and I'm making him go through all this so that you and I can understand how the system works, because sometimes we get a little mixed up about what happens and in what order. All right, now, in the very small percentage that you pointed out is not successful in this conference, and who decides it goes to trial? You?
If we can't arrive at a plea agreement that all parties are happy with, it's sort of agreed that it goes to trial. I mean, that's what has to happen. As long as we still have the ability to prosecute the case, sometimes, I mean, the cases that are going to trial usually are the cases where the defense attorney thinks that they have a shot at winning.
I see.
You know what I mean? So, you know, if they don't have any shot at winning, they're mostly entering a plea anyway, most likely.
Gotcha.
So the cases that go to trial are the ones that have some. Usually some difficulty, or it could be that the case is so serious that we just simply won't make a plea offer in the case because, you know, we think that the defendant should be convicted of all offenses and get the maximum amount of time that we can possibly get. You know, that usually happens in sometimes in child sex cases, in obviously homicide cases, mm-hmm. Where, you know, we think the offender can't be rehabilitated any further.
Does public opinion or pressure affect any of these decisions at this point? Or maybe it'd be on television every night, you know, the guy was caught murdering this person or
right.
whatever. And does that kind
try
of
to separate that
trouble?
As yeah. best we can. You know, what we try to do is do the right thing, you know, mm-hmm. and sometimes the public doesn't know all the things that we know, and sometimes we can't even share it.
Right.
I'll give you a good example. In child sex offense cases, especially, sometimes the child can't testify. You know, right. I know that because I've dealt with them, I've spoken to them, and I know that if I put this child on the stand, they're either going to be further traumatized or they simply won't be able to testify.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be able to tell a jury what happened.
Right.
You know, if I put that out there, then the defendant's never going to enter a plea. So sometimes I have to kind of hold that information close to my vest and try to negotiate a plea agreement with the defendant that may be a little less than he should get or he would get if he went to trial, but it keeps the child from having to testify. And those are really the tough decisions to make because you have to hold the offender accountable mm-hmm. without traumatizing the child. And those sometimes those interests are competing against each other, mm-hmm. and it's a tough balance.
If I'm an offender or an accused offender of some kind, not just that, but if I have a good lawyer, are they going to try to get a plea agreement with you? Is that the objective?
Yeah,
of the
absolutely. And that's yeah. a good defense lawyer isn't necessarily there to get their client off the hook, so to
mm-hmm.
speak. They're a good defense lawyer is there to put their client in the best possible position they could possibly be. And sometimes that might mean 20 years in prison
right.
instead of life. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? Or,
yes.
You know, so you can't judge a defense lawyer on whether or not they got their client off the hook. You really judge them on did they put their client in the best possible position they could be and cast their client in the best possible light. And a lot of it's about relationships. I mean, you know, I have a lot of lawyers that I have good relationships with, and they can sit down and talk to me, and we can make a lot of progress. There are other lawyers that we just don't have a working relationship, and there is no conversation, and those cases end up in trial, sometimes when they really shouldn't,
right.
just because there's no meeting of the minds between the attorneys. There's no ability to communicate.
Our guest is Bill Higgins, the district attorney of Bedford County, and you are learning about the process of criminal law right here on this station, free of charge, there's no tuition. And we are going to be back with Bill Higgins in just a few moments when Bedford County Speaks continues.
DestinationDelco.com, a new way to experience Delaware County. Destination Delco, from Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. 5 different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks, Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., just before Rush, on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Ipana Toothpaste and Sal Hepatica present
Mr. District Attorney, champion of the people, defender of truth, guardian of our fundamental rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
Welcome back to the office of District Attorney Bill Higgins here in Bedford County Courthouse. My name is Lloyd Roach, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks. And today's program is brought to you by DestinationDelco.com. Drugs and the misuse of drugs has probably done, in my opinion, because I've lived long enough to remember when this subject was barely spoken about.
It's a problem. It's a problem in our community. It's a problem everywhere. It's not special to Bedford County. It's all over the United States, all over the world, really. And it's destroying lives. It's tearing apart families in so many ways. So, yeah, drugs are a serious issue, and it's something that we take very seriously and we have been addressing.
If you come to Bill's office in the outer office here, a place you can actually get in without having a key or something, he has several brochures. One of them says ketamine hydrochloride. The next one says ecstasy, XTC, and there's one on marijuana. And by the way, I looked at these things while I was waiting for you for this interview, and they're actually very informative. They were produced by the former Attorney General Tom Corbett's office. And it's the knowledge of the symptoms of these things can be most helpful, it would seem to me, to employers and to parents. If you see someone coming into your office as an employee or your job site or your school as a teacher, and they're behaving in some of the ways that they're described in these brochures, that kind of tips you off. But my question is, how do they get their hands on this stuff? I looked at some of the prices in here. They said you need to buy 10 pills for one of these awful drugs. It can be $1,000. What's going on here? Who pays for it?
Well, you know, that kind of gets to the root of the problem in a lot of ways. I think the vast majority of crime that we deal with involves drugs in some way or another. And a lot of it comes down to theft. I mean, we get people, they have such a habit, they have no other way to afford it, that they get into stealing, committing robberies, stealing from loved ones, committing burglaries, things of that nature. So when we talk about the drug cases that we handle, it's not just the actual usage cases or the sale cases, it's the effects of that. The people that are acting erratically because they're high on drugs, so they're hurting family members through domestic violence situations, or they're stealing, either stealing drugs, stealing prescription drugs, or stealing money to go buy drugs, or people fighting each other because they owe each other money from drugs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just so many facets of the criminal justice system that are touched by drugs. We'd have very little crime if we could somehow eliminate controlled substances altogether. But, you know, that's probably not as much of a reality as we like it to be.
Well, very much aside from your political views about the subject, they are legalizing marijuana in many states.
Yeah, and I'm not shy talking about my political views on that. I think it's a mistake.
Yeah.
I think it's a mistake for a society to condone the use of mind-altering substances, whatever they might be. And, you know, you always get the counter, well, the alcohol is one of those things. Well, okay, but, you know, we've already tried prohibition and tried outlaw, but why are we going to further open these doors and further make these things available? There are, believe it or not, there are people in this world that don't smoke marijuana because it's illegal. Why are we going to take that away from them? So that now they very well may get involved in something that they wouldn't otherwise. I also think it sends a really bad message to our kids. You know, when we have the President of the United States talking about, you know, the marijuana and legalization of marijuana, you know, what does that tell our kids? That it's basically that it's an acceptable behavior. We actually are to the point now where when we make marijuana arrests, one of the arguments we hear is, well, this stuff's legal in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Well, it's not legal here, and we're going to continue to prosecute it. Another myth out there about marijuana is that there are people sitting in jails for possession of marijuana. And that's just simply not true. You know, you hear that, but there never are names associated with these mythical cases where people are sitting in jail. You know, there may be people in our county jail right now who are there because of marijuana charges, but most likely they were on probation and they wouldn't stop smoking marijuana and they kept testing positive and we tried to work with them and they refused to comply.
One of the brochures from former Attorney General Corbett said that that marijuana, among other things, can affect the growth of a teenager. What, are we crazy? we want to put this into the hands of a 15-year-old so he can have his growth retarded by this?
I mean,
a lot of these harder drugs are distributed by teenagers at teenage parties. Where does a teenager get drugs to sell at a party?
You know, unfortunately, it's probably easier to get your hands on controlled substances than it is to buy liquor or beer in a lot of ways, you know, because it's all sold on the black market. It's all sold, you know, in situations where both the seller and the buyer don't want to be caught. So, you know, they're getting it from a lot of the drugs we get come from Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, those areas, you know, they're brought in to Bedford County. The other drug we're having a big problem with is methamphetamine, and that is something that you can manufacture yourself, and that's what kind of makes that somewhat problematic, because you get people think that they're gonna make some money and feed their habit by making methamphetamine. It's a very dangerous process, but all the materials that you need to make methamphetamine can pretty much be purchased over the counter in local stores, you know.
And there was something I saw in the press recently. You found a meth lab somewhere here.
We found several. We've shut down several meth labs. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they're easy to catch, though, too, because our merchants have been fantastic telling us, you know, hey, there was somebody in here today that bought a large quantity of Sudafed. And they tip us off, and then we follow up on that information. So although it seems to be an easy process to get involved in and to make some money and to, you know, get high, it's also easy for us to catch you. So we've been very successful in tracking down cooks that are making meth and bringing them to justice. We have a great network of investigators on our drug task force that work those cases, and they work very closely with the local merchants.
Do the Bedford residents have any clue how good it is here in terms of the crime rate?
Yeah, I think people do realize that. This is an incredibly safe community. Even the crime that we do have, we don't have a whole lot of random crime. The burglaries that we have, usually when we catch people, it's somewhat a family member or something like that, somebody they knew. We don't get a whole lot of just random crime where people are randomly victimizing other people. There usually is some kind of connection there. Now, I don't know that makes it any better, but, you know, it makes you feel a little safer when you're not subject to those random type crimes. And one of the reasons I think, you know, one of the criticisms I've gotten over the years is sometimes I'm too hard on crime. Well, you know what? There's a reason for that. I want to keep this community safe. We do take some things a little more seriously here than maybe taken other places. Like, for example, marijuana. We prosecute those cases. We don't, you know, in some places in this country, even in this state, you know, marijuana is you pay a small fine and it's over and done with. We take it serious. We take all crimes serious, low-level crimes. We prosecute bad checks. I remember when Rudy Giuliani was cleaning up New York City and he had that broken windows theory that, you know, you got to make a big deal about the little things to keep the big things from getting bigger.
And do you agree with that theory?
I agree with it completely. Now, they were in a different situation. We don't have those squeegee men that we have to shut down and things like that. But, you know, I do believe in that, that, you know, you have to address crime early on. I think the best way to approach punishment is swift justice. You know, I'd rather put somebody in jail quickly for a short period of time than drag it out for a long time and then they, you know, to do a longer sentence. So I believe in swift punishment to get people on the right track, especially, like I said, with young people. We're usually, when we're dealing with young people, what we're trying to do is give them the most punishment we can right now with the least long-term impact on their life. So if I can avoid a kid from having a felony conviction, but, you know, maybe put them in jail for a short period of time right now to wake them up, that's what we do. You know, I don't want him 10 years from now suffering the consequences of a stupid decision he made when he was 19 years old.
If a young person is incarcerated at age 16, 17, 18, 19, whatever, I guess you're an adult at 18. Is that on his record for the rest of his life?
We try to avoid that when we can. You know, we have programs. One of our programs that we have is called ARD, Accelerated Rehabilitation Disposition, where we'll put a young person on a probation, but no conviction. So the charges will go away if they successfully complete probation. For juveniles, we have several programs like that. And so people under 18, we put them on what they're called diversion programs.
I see.
You keep them out of court as best you can. And my goal whenever I'm dealing with a juvenile is to get this kid to his 18th birthday with a clean record and the tools he needs to succeed. Sometimes that's hard because, you know, they just won't comply with the terms and conditions we're trying to set forth. But a lot of what we're dealing with in juvenile court, and I'm sorry, I feel bad saying this sometimes, but is providing parenting that's not going on at home. That's what juvenile court really boils down to. Some of these kids can really thrive with some structure in their life. You know, a probation officer on them, making sure that they're going to school, getting good grades. You know, if they have a job, you know, a part-time job, that they're showing up, things like that. Unfortunately, you know, those are things that a lot of parents instill in their kids, but there are a lot of parents who don't, and that's unfortunate.
Well, you know, you say that, but yesterday I made a talk about our local ham radio club to a vacation Bible school down in Rainsburg, and I met some of the most intelligent, well-behaved young people I've seen in years. So I understand the parenting problem, but it's small compared to a lot of places. You've got a strong religious work ethic.
Absolutely.
Here. You've got everybody seems to be married mostly, not always, mm-hmm. but mostly. So there's family units here, despite what everybody else is trying to do to tear it down. So it's to your advantage. One final question before we go. Businesses. We have a lot of retail businesses here. Seems to be a pretty flourishing downtown. Obviously, Breezewood is highly active in businesses. Does the district attorney office get involved at all with retail theft and things like this?
Oh, absolutely.
Benefit from your office?
Yeah, the two things that we do to help businesses, two of the programs that we do, are prosecuting retail theft cases for sure. We take those cases very seriously, and we hold offenders accountable. If there's any restitution, we make sure they pay it. And we're also there to help them with bad checks. Believe it or not, in this day and age, people
really?
Still write checks when they buy things.
And they write bad ones.
And they write bad ones. In right. fact, I think the people that are writing checks are more likely to write a bad check than to write a good check, because most people have a debit card or something like right. that now. So, and there are businesses that are very trusting, and I think that speaks well of our community, but then they get stuck with bad checks. And we go after the offender and get them their money back. So we do a lot of working closely with retail businesses to help them deal with those unfortunate sides of business.
Now, if I were an employer today here in Bedford County, would I be able to come to your office and ask you to maybe to check out a prospective employees or any function, that kind of function I could get in here?
We could put you in touch with the resources that you need to get a criminal okay. background check done right. on somebody. And, you know, and to the extent that something's a public record and we have that information, yeah, we'll always share that with a merchant.
Or so, your local police department
yeah,
can do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We're willing to do that.
And then one final question about police. I am very fond, personally, of the work that the Pennsylvania State Police does, especially their crime lab. Do you use their crime lab here?
Oh, yeah, almost yeah. exclusively. In fact, a couple years back, we used to have the hospital did all our testing for DUI cases. And it was a little bit of a burden on the hospital to do that. They were very nice and cordial and in going through that. But then sometimes I have to drag their employees into court. So they're still good about drawing blood samples for us at the hospital. But we send all those samples to the state police crime lab for testing. And they're obviously more willing to come testify than, you know, dragging some lab tech out of the hospital and taking them away from their duties. That was kind of frustrating for us and them. We, like I said, we work very closely with the UPMC on the drawing blood in those DUI cases, but that all gets sent to the crime lab. We send all of our drugs for testing to the crime lab and DNA evidence. The State Police Crime Lab is just fantastic, and I've had a great working relationship with them over the years.
Well, we're out of time, so do we have anything to add? Did I miss anything?
No, I think we covered it all. I really enjoyed having this time with you.
Well, I enjoyed talking to you, and our guest today has been D.A. Bill Higgins, who is the district attorney, obviously, of Bedford County, Pennsylvania, and you're up for re-election, so this will be your fourth term?
Fourth term. I'm running unopposed. It'll
unopposed.
Be my fourth term, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm running unopposed, so.
Well, hopefully good luck to you with that guy that's not running against you.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've really been a good sport, and I really, really appreciate you very much, your talking to us, and it's really been a pleasure to do that, and thanks again.
Thank you, Lloyd. You have a good day.
Bedford County Speaks was brought to you today by DestinationDelco.com. To learn more about the wonders of Delaware County and the Brandywine Valley, visit DestinationDelco.com. See you again next Saturday, right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, have a great weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday, beginning at 8:30, to hear about the work, lives, and the lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.